This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Well, welcome in to White Sox Weekly. It is April 27th, 2024. The White Sox beat the Rays last night. Needed it to 9-4, the final score. We'll talk a lot about yesterday's ballgame, the fourth win of the season for the White Sox. We'll talk a lot about tonight's ballgame, hopefully the fifth win of the season for the White Sox, and that would lead to the first series win of the year for the White Sox. We've got your phone calls, as always, 312-332-3776. That's our priority. This show is your show, and we're happy to have you with us. Let's see. What else do we have planned for today? A ton planned for today. The White Sox have changed up the roster quite a bit in the last 24 hours. Tommy Pham and Rafael Ortega are with the ball club, and both of them featured in last night's win against the Rays. White Sox third baseman Danny Mendick is down on the field right now and hanging out with some White Sox fans, and he'll join us on the show a little bit later in the afternoon, probably something like, 4:15-ish, maybe that area for Danny Mendick. After he's finished with batting practice, he'll be our guest here on White Sox Weekly. The brass at the network here were overjoyed when they found out that Danny Mendick had signed with the White Sox as a minor league deal in spring training, because the brass here at the network loves Danny Mendick on White Sox Weekly. They told me that during the offseason. They said, we want more Mendick. And I said, fine, we'll get you more Danny Mendick here on the show. That's our plan. We should also let you know that you should get ready to rumble. Join us at the ballpark on Thursday, May 9th, for WWE Night as the White Sox take on the Guardians at 6:40 p.m. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. More stuff going on here at the ballpark, too. We got the crawl going on around the concourse in the outfield. It is a rockin' time out there, and beautiful. I mean, gorgeous weather. It's a little bit windy, 80 degrees, so that breeze is just serving to move some of the heat out of the ballpark and keep everybody nice and cool. The hockey sweater is the giveaway this afternoon. It is a sky blue and gorgeous. See a lot of fans walking around with that on in the concourse this afternoon as well. Let's start with the moves the White Sox made yesterday. Some of them well-known, some of them a little telegraphed, and some of them a bit surprising in terms of how they changed the roster. In case you're just kind of tuning in here over the weekend, the White Sox selected two contracts from AAA Charlotte. That would be outfielders Rafael Ortega and outfielder Tommy Pham. In order to make room for those outfielders, Dominic Fletcher, the rookie, was optioned to AAA Charlotte, and Bailey Horn, a left-handed pitcher the White Sox picked up from the Cubs in exchange for Matthew Thompson earlier on in the season, was designated for assignment, and outfielder Kevin Pillar was designated for assignment as well. Pham, and this is kind of interesting to me, I was a little bit unaware of this until Pham signed with the White Sox a few weeks ago, and then we saw reports from people like Bob Nightingale and Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic. I don't know who Tom Rosenthal is, probably a good reporter in his own right. But Rosenthal and Nightingale, we'd all heard that Pham had cut some weight and intended on allowing that, and obviously an intense offseason training program, to get him into more of the mix in center field as opposed to playing just in the corners, as he primarily had over the last few seasons. And that, along with Tommy Pham being Tommy Pham, allowed the White Sox or kind of goosed the White Sox into saying, listen, with Luis Robert Jr. down, with the production that we're not getting out of really any of the offensive positions right now, Tommy Pham works for us. Pham, and you'll hear from him in a little bit here in the show, was kind of choosing between two offers, he said, San Diego and here with the White Sox. And as is often the case, financial motivators being what they are, Chicago seemed the better option for him. Now, he's got a chance here on this roster to have as much playing time as he can possibly have over the next 6 to 8 weeks or so. That's the prospective return date for a guy like Luis Robert Jr. And obviously, there will probably be some, you know, rehab work down at AAA Charlotte, too, and we'll see exactly when he's able to rejoin the lineup. But White Sox general manager Chris Getz talked a little bit about that, and you'll hear it coming up here on the show here shortly. With Pham, you saw the immediate returns. And what I noticed most is that yesterday, amidst a 2-for-5 day where he also reached on an error and scored, Pham hit the ball hard. His first single was one where he pulled the ball, 106, a line drive for a single up to the left center field side. That was just after Nicky Lopez, who'd been on a nice little run in his own right. Lopez was on three times. He was also 2-for-5 with a reach on an error, and he scored in that eighth inning after reaching on that error. He singled up the middle and also doubled. It's just night. Pham presents something the White Sox don't have in the lineup right now. Will have when guys get back into gear, and we saw some of that last night. But Pham looks like a guy who's willing to turn on a baseball, turn on a fastball a little bit. And that's a pitch the White Sox collectively have really struggled to hit here in the first 25, 26 games of the season. It was just really nice to see Pham get that done and be ready for it. He also talked pretty openly in the clubhouse yesterday, and you'll hear some of this a little bit later too, that with the short run in Charlotte and not having a spring training, as a lot of players who have signed late here over the last couple of years have had to deal with, he's a little bit behind the eight ball, a little bit dealing at a disadvantage, but he refused to let that be any kind of excuse. Pham comes with a reputation. There's no tiptoeing around that. There's no sugarcoating it. And when you talk to former teammates of his, when you talk to people around the league who know Pham intimately, professionally, the way that, you know, a coworker kind of does, or a guy that shares road trips or is in traveling parties or whatever, that edginess, that professionalism, that competitiveness is lauded. I mean, absolutely celebrated by Tommy Pham. And Pedro Grifol and Chris Getz, both to their credit, talked about Tommy being a guy that can add that edge to this ball club because maybe it needs a little kick in the seat, you know? I mean, maybe it does just need a little bit of edge coming from the outside and not really caring about, you know, whose elbows are where and who eats with what fork and all that kind of stuff. I tend to think that that kind of change could be exactly what this White Sox team needs right now. And if wins and losses are evidence of anything, last night the evidence was forefront. 9-4, the win over the Rays. Now, Pham wasn't the only guy that was really producing in last night's ballgame. You also saw Chris Flexen throw a really clean 5 innings against the Rays. First batter up was Yandy Diaz, who hits the ball harder than just about anybody. We've got the lineups out for today as well. We'll get to that in a second. But Yandy Diaz was hit by a pitch by Michael Kopech in that eighth inning. So the White Sox had their lineups out about an hour ago, maybe even earlier, earlier than that. The Rays lineup just popped as I was sitting down here to check in with our producer, Jake Cantu, who's in our Chicago studios. So I've just seen the Rays lineup, and Yandy Diaz is not in that lineup. He was hit by a 98, 99 mile an hour fastball, kind of around the left pinky, the top of the knuckles area, you know, the base of the hand sort of thing. That can swell fast. I've not seen a report from the Rays on the situation or the issue for Pham, for Yandy Diaz. But suffice to say, he's not healthy enough to get himself into the lineup tonight, which you could definitely understand. Anyway, Diaz led off the ball game against Chris Flexen with a double back up the middle. It was an absolute blister shot. And then Flexen really settled down. The curveball was really good last night, especially early on, setting up hitters with some of the slower stuff. A real 12-6 action, top to bottom with that curveball for Flexen as he's gotten back to a top, over-the-top delivery. And while Flexen did not pitch well in his first three outings with the White Sox, some of it was okay, no doubt about it. Then he got hit around a little bit, seemed to be searching for some of it. He was shifted back into the bullpen to make room for Nick Nastrini and Jonathan Cannon. Those two made two starts. Cannon will start for the White Sox tonight and get a third. But Flexen, after going back to the bullpen, threw 6 1/3 innings where he allowed just one run. And it really had been, you know, shaped a bit differently. I think in one of those outings, relief-wise, he was coming in for a starter I believe it was for a Michael Soroka start. I'll page through my book here, make sure I have it right, where he just kind of had to get up early and go to work. Had to throw four innings, threw four very good innings, innings the White Sox absolutely needed on that road trip against the Phillies and against the Twins, respectively. And the White Sox got out of him what they needed. In fact, it was Chris Flexen coming in for Garrett Crochet after Crochet had given up those 2 3-run home runs to Alec Bohm in Philly last week. Sox needed it. They needed that kind of depth out of the bullpen. And Pedro Grifol credited Flexen for that work. Well, that work has turned into another shot at the starting rotation. And last night, thumbs up for Flexen. Sox did get into a little bit of trouble in the sixth. Flexen came back out to face the top of the lineup. Remember, Diaz had doubled against him first time up, struck out second time up. He drew a walk his third time up. Then Randy Arozarena, dangerous guy as always, struggling a little bit to start the year, but still a dangerous bat. Took some mighty swings last night, especially in an AB against Michael Kopech in the eighth. Arozarena walked in the sixth. So there you go, in a two-run game, the White Sox have walked the first two hitters, sending Chris Flexen back out to try and get some outs in that sixth inning. It did not go his way. Then Dominic Leone, veteran arm out of the bullpen, who himself has had some ups and downs this season, pitched a beautiful 1-2-3 against Amed Rosario, Isak Paredes, and Harold Ramirez. Some really crafty stuff from Dominic Leone, leaning on the cutter and slider away from a trio of right-handers, who was able to get weak contact and strike out Rosario to start his night. Really excellent job getting the Sox out of trouble. They were then able to put three on the board with a Martin Maldonado 3-run homer. Great for Maldonado to get out of a slump. He was 0-for-26 coming into that at-bat. Had yet to hit a homer, had yet to drive in a run. Got all of those things done with a 3-run shot off of Zach Eflin in that sixth inning. It was after Danny Mendick had singled and then Paul DeJong singled as well. And Maldonado just hauled off and whacked one into the left field seats. And that was enough to get the White Sox the lead they needed. But I suppose they would have to tack on a few more, and they did. Two in the seventh and two in the eighth. The Rays would get two in the seventh. Walks became an issue for Jordan Leisure and Michael Kopech late in the game last night. Still, I think with Leisure, you got to separate the two of them, right? I think Leisure's learning his way around the league a little bit. Last night, an uncharacteristic, at least based on what we've seen so far, complete lack of control. He threw 9 straight balls to Rays hitters coming in out of the bullpen, walked the first two, and then 1-0 on Isak Paredes. The next batter he faced was able to get out of it, allowing just one run on a walk with the bases loaded. It's a tough spot to ask a rookie to go get it done in. And he was able to avoid terrible damage and got things back together. I think Jonathan Cannon is absolutely an arm you can dream on here, perhaps pitching in super high leverage stuff later on in his career. As a rookie right now, you're just looking at him get his feet wet, get his confidence all established and set. Kopech, it looked like, was going to get a 2-inning opportunity, but only able to pitch one. The pitch count got up on him. The control wavered a bit on him. And the Rays, quite frankly, were teed up for a couple of fastballs of his in that eighth inning. And then Tanner Banks was able to come in and shut things down for a White Sox victory, 9-4 over the Rays last night. The other streak, that last night's win stopped for the White Sox was their inability to win a series opener. They were 0-8. In series openers this season and being outscored 51-2 in those games. They had only scored 2 runs in series openers. So now 11 runs in series openers. 9-4 the final last night, and a win with a chance to take a series with getting one of the two against the Rays on Saturday, today, or Sunday, tomorrow. So coming back home, and certainly after an 0-7 trip through Philly and Minnesota, things at least feel a little bit better after the last 24 hours. There have been, some real tangible changes made to the roster and to the lineup here with Tommy Pham and Rafael Ortega. We'll talk a lot about Dominic Fletcher being optioned down to AAA. We'll talk about Kevin Pillar. He's given an interview since being DFA'd by the White Sox. Certainly an up and down transition period for Kevin Pillar late in his big league career. Hopefully there's a lot of life left there and he's able to hook onto another team and be an impact bat, an impact guy on defense, an impact veteran for whomever he catches on with. It just wasn't here, and instead Tommy Pham is going to get that chance. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, I want to bring you the first part of General Manager Chris Getz's speaks with the media yesterday. He sat down with White Sox beat reporters for about 20 minutes or so, and we'll bring you part one of that when we come back. It's a lot about the state of this clubhouse, the state of the coaches and manager here with this ball club after a 4-22 start to the season. It's a lot about the minor league system that the White Sox have accumulated here, and at least at AA Birmingham is looking like one of the better organizations in the minor leagues. A lot of talent there getting it done, and a lot of minor leaguers who have come back in trades here over the last calendar year or so have begun to bloom and perhaps be the next pieces for this White Sox franchise that'll be long-term cornerstone pieces. Wow, the next step is getting this major league organization, this major league on-the-field product, into more of a winning mode. And step one was at least accomplished last night in snapping a 7-game losing streak, beating the Rays 9-4. So when we come back, you'll hear part one of the latest from White Sox general manager Chris Getz. I'm Connor McKnight. You've got White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win the best seats in the house. April's winner will get 2 Wintrust Scout Seat tickets to 3 home games against the Red Sox, the Rangers, and the Mets. Enjoy the views directly behind home plate, complimentary food and beverage, in-seat service, and VIP parking. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. I'm Connor McKnight. You got White Sox Weekly. White Sox general manager Chris Getz spoke to reporters yesterday, kind of gave an update on the state of the franchise, answered a lot of questions about the roster moves made yesterday, and talked a lot about his coaching staff and the minor leagues, the minor league system that the White Sox are developing over the last year or so. I'm going to play this in two parts. When we come back on the other side of the 4 o'clock hour, we'll talk a lot about part number one. 4:15 or so, we hope to be joined by White Sox third baseman Danny Mendick, and we'll play part two of this conversation that Getz had with reporters a bit later on in the show, all leading up to the pregame show at 5:30 for the White Sox and Rays tonight. But here, part one of Chris Getz's conversation with White Sox beat reporters yesterday began with some of his opening remarks about the roster moves that the White Sox made to bring Tommy Pham and Rafael Ortega up to the big leagues yesterday.
We've got a couple transactions that have happened today. We've got Tommy Pham joining the team. Fortunately, it's at the roster spot for Kevin Pillar, and then we've got Ortega here as well, up from Charlotte. And we optioned Dominic Fletcher down. So, we're at a point where we're looking to shake some things up a little bit offensively. Tommy Pham's got, a pretty solid history of offensive performance in this league. So to be able to get his bat in the lineup, I think is going to be helpful. And Ortega's been playing well in AAA, and Fletch, I think it's a good time for him to catch his breath a little bit. You know, he came over obviously in a trade pretty close to spring training. Took a little bit for him to find his footing. I certainly personally can relate to someone that gets traded to a new team earlier in their career. And it can be, it can be pretty trying at times, and you look around and you don't have a lot of familiar faces. So really just trying to slow his world down and get some consistent at-bats down in Charlotte to get him, back to himself, so to speak.
Chris, in a season like this, what is the balance between wanting to get some proven guys in here to help the major league offense and then try to maybe get some playing time for young guys also?
Yeah, I mean, it's there's no perfect way to go about it. We're at a point right now that certainly we're trying to go out there and score more runs. And there are some younger players on this roster. We will continue to add younger players as, the season progresses. And, some of those veteran guys that have been through situations perhaps like this before or have a proven track record can help in the development of some players at the major league level. So there's a handful of different factors. You know, at this point, just felt like it was time to make some of those moves and add some different bats and a different dynamic to this team.
Chris, you've talked about this whole thing as a process, and it may take 6 months, it may take a year, it may take longer, but as you sit here 3-22, what is the feeling of the organization overall?
Yeah, I mean, I quite honestly, it is frustrating to look up and have a record like that. No one was hoping for something like that, but I you look at the health of the organization underneath in our farm system, and it's certainly climbing in the ranks. I saw here recently we're as ranked as high as number three. You look at our Birmingham club and our other affiliates that are playing really well. You look at some of the arms that we've acquired in the last year, and most recently in the Dylan Cease trade, that have really gone out there and performed well. So it's exciting from that standpoint. You know, looking towards the future, I mean, there's no better place to look than what you have in your farm system. And eventually, when the time is right, some of those players will work their way up to the major leagues, and we hope for greater success with the talent that we've acquired.
We heard during a tough first month of last season, front office come out and, you know, say it's not all on Pedro. What is your opinion of kind of the job Pedro has done through another tough first month for him?
I mean, he's been steady. We just asked for consistency from our coaching staff. And, you know, the clubhouse, it seems to be, they're showing up on a daily basis, ready to play and perform. Obviously, we wish we had better results. But I you know, the evaluation is always ongoing for players, staff, and myself, and you know, it's still early in the year. Obviously, it can feel like there's a lot to overcome, and really focusing on getting our players better on a daily basis.
Has it gotten worse in regard to Pedro's standing with you since the last time you were asked about it? I think that was like April 9th. Obviously, however many losses ago, but has it gotten
He's been steady. He really has. And listen, you know, this is professional sports. And, you know, there's always a high level of scrutiny with leadership positions, whether it be myself or anyone else. And really the measure of success is going to be our players and how they're out there performing and our players getting better on a regular basis.
Is anything that's happening at the big league level satisfactory to you? Is any of it, you know, is there something you can point to that you're pleased with?
Yeah, I mean, you look at what Eric Fetty has done coming over from the KBO, and, you know, his performance obviously early on. Garrett Crochet, you know, was lights out as a starter. He's you know, other teams are starting to adjust to him, and you know, we're here to help him make those adjustments. But more than anything, he realizes that you know, this is Major League Baseball, and you got to make some tweaks along the way. So, you know, those are some obvious arms that come to mind. You got Michael Kopech, who has been electric in the bullpen. Obviously, we would like to be able to get to him a little bit more and see what he's capable of doing in you know, closing situations or high leverage. You got Corey Lee at the catching position that has continued to get better. You look at where he was, you know, when we got him last year and how he finished the year to spring training to where he's at now. I mean, I don't think there's a player on the field that's really taken greater strides than him. So, you know, I know it's difficult for whether it be fans or anyone else following closely to kind of find these positives, but I certainly have been able to with the progress of some of our players. But, you know, that doesn't mean that other players don't need to step up either. You know, Andrew Vaughn is a guy that has had some early season struggles, but his at-bats are getting better, you know, and hopefully he can build off what he's done here recently and really help our offense get going, because he's an important piece of our success.
What is the kind of message to the fan base at this point, with even in consideration with the younger guys in the system, Birmingham, who are doing well, but the struggles and kind of the problems up here, overall?
I said, you know, whether it be, you know, last August or September when I took over in this position, the easiest thing to do is just focus on the results of your major league club. And I get it. I mean, we're here to win games at the major league level, but, you know, you got to look at the foundation of an organization. You've got to look at every department. You've got to make sure that you're sound in all of those areas, because at the end of the day, that's a byproduct of every process that exists. And it takes time. And You know, you look at player acquisition and what we've been able to do on the trade market and some of the players that we've drafted and some players we've signed internationally, there's been some positives. We have to stay at it. And, you know, when you start making poor decisions or you're short-sighted, that's when the mistakes happen, and that's when you show up at the major leagues and you're not happy with the products that is there. So, but it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of focus, and we've got a group that is sticking together, and we're going to stay at it.
I think everyone needs to be process-oriented in this sport, but when the results are as early as it is, when they're this extreme, does it prompt a degree of what's going on here, either offensively or defensively, of reviewing your processes?
I mean, yeah, you've got to look at things like that. I mean, I obviously, you know, losing three bats of significance like we did in the first 10 days was not helpful. You know, it was a lineup that, we needed those players to be available. We needed them to show up and be productive for us to have a sound offense, and to lose those guys has been difficult. Obviously, Eloy's back, and just having his presence in the box has been encouraging. We're not too far off of Louis Robert returning. It's a couple weeks away. Obviously, that'll be a big boost, and obviously the addition of Tommy Pham as well. It could be difficult to win Major League Baseball games. It really can. You look at some of the games and, you know, we're up in the first 5 to 6 innings, or we're up in the ninth inning. We're not able to close out the game. It takes tremendous focus from every player on the field, every staff member that we have in the dugout. So we just need to continue to stay at it, and I need to find ways for us to get better. But I certainly don't want to rush any of our players from our minor league system. They're maturing on a daily basis. There's been so many bright spots down to Kannapolis, up to Charlotte. Obviously those are strong indications of greater success in the future. I know everyone wants it to happen now, but we've got to be patient and go about it the right way with those players.
You think Robert could be back by mid-May? Is that what you're kind of
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, he's doing really well. He's out in Arizona. He's running, he's hitting. He's moving around well, so it's been really positive.
Go ahead, Jeff.
What is your center field mix now with Robert still coming back and Pilar and Fletcher now off?
Yeah, we've got Ortega, and we got Tommy Pham. Pham played, some center field in Charlotte. He's a guy that, he's in really good shape right now. He's lost some weight. He's moving around well. So we're going to have a combination of guys in center field, and we've got a handful of outfielders that can handle different positions, and we're going to be as creative as possible to create as much offense as we can.
That's White Sox general manager Chris Getz. Part one of a conversation he had with White Sox beat reporters yesterday. Part two a little bit later on in the show. When we come back in just a few minutes, we'll react to some of the things that Getz said. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number if you got something you'd like to say. Before we do any of that, we're going to pause 10 seconds for station identification. Harry Potter fans, join us at the ballpark on Friday, May 10th for Harry Potter Night as the White Sox take on the Guardians at 6:40 p.m. Be sure to stay after the game for a post-game fireworks show. No horcruxes, please. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. More White Sox Weekly when we come back on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Greeny, 10 to noon weekdays, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. Join us at the ballpark tomorrow, April 28th, for Family Sundays, presented by Coke Zero Sugar. Tickets starting at only $10. Enjoy Kids Run the Bases post-game. I know you've heard me talk about it before, but Kids Running the Bases Sundays after the home game is maybe... yeah, it's probably my favorite thing about this job. It's absolutely fantastic. Enjoy Kids Around the Bases, post-game character artists, and more. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. I look forward to a Sunday, hopefully soon, this summer, where my daughter gets to run the bases for the first time. I think we're close. We're very close. I don't know if 90, maybe she could do home the first or something like that. I don't know. Probably worth a shot at one way or another. It's one of my favorite things in the world. We've been talking a lot about this, about the conversation that Chris Getz had, general manager Chris Getz had yesterday with White Sox beat reporters here on the show. We just played part one of it for you. here a few minutes ago. And we'll play part two a little bit later on here this afternoon. White Sox third baseman Danny Mendick scheduled to join us in just a couple of minutes after he finishes up his pregame prep and responsibilities there. He's been pretty impactful to this White Sox lineup since coming up. Five games already, three multi-hit games in those five games. And, you know, just overall a good guy defensively to have on the roster, too, in the absence of Yoan Moncada. I want to talk some about the roster moves the White Sox made yesterday, beyond just the Tommy Pham of it all, even though that is kind of the headliner, right? Pham's an established big leaguer, a guy that was a big part of the middle of a Diamondbacks lineup that made their run into the World Series to lose to the Texas, to Jake Cantu's Texas Ranger. Jack is our producer in the downtown Chicago studios. And although he is obviously a White Sox fan, the man grew up a Rangers fan, and you can hardly take that away from him, especially when his team wins a World Series for the first time in ever. So when you see Tommy Pham do that, you know, put up that kind of performance and be that kind of guy. I mean, shoot, he hit like something 450 or something like that in an NLDS against the Dodgers, where they were a little light pitching-wise, L.A., but then again, so were the Diamondbacks. So they needed the offense, and they got it from Tommy Pham. Pham is can be an impact bat, and while he's not, you know, your 40-40 kind of guy or anything like that, he can steal some bases for you, too. I was kind of I had to recheck the math. He had 22 stolen bases last year between his time with the Mets and the Diamondbacks. His single season high in steals is 25, and that was with 2019 when he was with the Rays. He's playing some of his former teammates here this weekend while he is now with the White Sox. And now shifting into center field, you heard Getz kind of address the fact that Pham lost some weight in the offseason, got himself into great shape, you know, kind of back into center field shape. You trust a guy like that, a veteran outfielder, a guy who kind of knows his path to the baseball, to go ahead and lock down center field in every advantage, every matchup he's going to get based on the hitting advantage that he may or may not have in a matchup against the starter. We've got the lineup for the White Sox today, and Pham is indeed in it again. Nicky Lopez leads off. He'll play second base. Tommy Pham's center fielder. Gavin Sheets is in right field. Eloy Jimenez will DH. Andrew Vaughn's at first base. Andrew Benintendi's in left. Danny Mendick's got third. Paul DeYoung's at short. Martin Maldonado is doing the catching today. Got the Rays lineup as well. Does not have Yandy Diaz in the lineup. I told you earlier, and in case you missed it yesterday, Diaz was plunked on the left hand by a pitch from Michael Kopech. It was humming in there, as many pitches from Michael Kopech do. About 98, 90 miles an hour. So Richie Palacios is going to lead off in right field. Randy Arozarena, who is cold to start the year, is in left. Isak Paredes, who is not, will DH. Austin Shenton, a name I'm not familiar with, a man we'll see play just for the first couple of goes. 26-year-old first baseman. He is a lefty stick, is Austin Shenton. Goes 6'205", according to the website I'm reading right now. He'll play first base. Ahmed Rosario at second. Curtis Meade at third. Ben Rortvedt will catch. Jose Caballero at short. And Jose Siri in center field. Those are the Rays against the White Sox this afternoon. But without Yandy Diaz, obviously, White Sox are facing one fewer bat with a whole lot of power and a whole lot of biceps, too. So with Pham on the roster, Dominic Fletcher was sent down to AAA Charlotte, and while I can absolutely understand wanting to shake up the roster and the lineup, the options as much as possible, given the fact that the White Sox had gotten off to, or are off to, such a woeful offensive start, things have just been so difficult in so many aspects. You heard Getz talking a lot about it in the segment prior. You're looking for production. You're looking to, I don't think it's change just for change's sake. I mean, there are reasons. You bring up Danny Mendick. He was on such a heater before getting up to the White Sox. There are reasons you bring up Tommy Pham. We just went through all of them for like two segments of the show. Rafael Ortega can control an at-bat up there. You're looking for the platoon advantage in some of those cases. Kevin Pillar designated for assignment. It had been a tough opportunity for him, a tough ask for him, one that he, to his credit, was more than willing to take. The idea was that he was going to face a lot of left-handed pitching that didn't shake out the way they wanted to, I think, given the injuries that the White Sox kind of succumbed to with Luis Robert Jr. and Moncada and Jimenez all going down in short order. Eloy's back now and swinging a good bat, too. Has hit a couple already, and it's been fun to watch Eloy get back into the swing of things. But with Dominic Fletcher, I had kind of hoped to see him get some more run, even if the struggles were there, and they had been over the last week and a half or so, only because I think that's valuable. But I think what's worth remembering there, and what I kind of have to remind myself of too, is that we are a month into the season, less than technically, and there's still a lot of time for Fletcher to go down, get whatever sorted that he needs to sort, and come on back up and make an impact. So we will address those in a little bit, those moves in a little bit. We will talk to Danny Mendick on the other side of a quick break, too. I'm Connor McKnight. You got White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at @ESPN_Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight, and joining us on the show is White Sox third baseman Danny Mendick. Danny, appreciate you coming on, my friend. I apologize that I've not come down to say hello, but you've only been back in town for a day. Thanks for coming on the show, and welcome back to the White Sox.
Connor, yeah, thanks for having me. It's been great.
Absolutely, man. You know, I let off the show talking about the fact that we were going to have you on, and I said the brass here at the network were really happy when you signed with the White Sox because they were hoping you'd be back on White Sox Weekly at least a time or two this season. They loved it. They couldn't wait, and they were your favorite. You were their favorite interview. My bosses kept me around just for the Danny Mendick shot.
That's great to hear. I love that. No, it's
you're telling me.
Yeah, it was good. It's good to sign back. I mean, I had a feeling that, you know, when I left 2 years ago or whatever it was, that it wasn't going to be my last time. So, you know, parted ways. They got to go experience some new territory and made my way back.
Yeah, I want to talk about the path back a little bit, but more than anything else, I need to know what it feels like to ride a 5-game homer streak, regardless of what level you're playing at. I mean, yeah, sure, it's AAA, but you had been on a heater since getting to the White Sox, or before getting to the White Sox here the last week or so, and then 3 multi-hit games in your last 5. Is it just a beach ball right now? Like, you tell me.
No, you know what? Obviously, you know, a lot of hard work in the off season, but being healthy kind of got the opportunity to experience what it was like to not have like a fully healthy knee. You know, last season you're playing and you don't load as well into your backside. And it's all these things that I didn't really notice. But when I finally got healthy this off season and I learned kind of how to load back into my back leg, you know, I felt the difference that it was beforehand. So it was like, all right, well, now I'm doing something that I really like. And now it's all about just going out and doing it. And, yeah, the five homers in a row was awesome. Pretty fun feeling going out there every day and doing that. But just kind of a cool thing to prove to myself and prove to everybody, you know, what I'm capable of doing.
Is rewarding the right word for that? I mean, because you've worked your butt off to get to the big leagues in the first place, you are that kind of guy. You come with that reputation. I have to imagine you attack the rehab with that same kind of mindset.
Right.
But that's, you know, it's hard to rehab a major injury like that. I just, it comes with a lot.
Yeah, I think, honestly, the best part about it, too, is the mental the strength that you get from it. You know, I talk about all these guys that get Tommy John and stuff like that. Mentally, it's harder than physically because, you know, they have all these programs and things to do to get physically better. But mentally, you have to actually do it and you have to put the time into it. And so, yeah, mentally, it made me a stronger player. And, you know, this baseball is mental. It's very mental. So to have that mental strength really helped me out.
Was there like a training session or like a workout or something where it finally you had that moment where you're like, oh, my knee's back, I got this? Or was it kind of gradual over time? I'm just wondering if there was like a eureka light bulb moment where you realized, okay, there it is again.
Yeah, it was definitely after the season last year. It was in the off season. I was starting to work out again after taking some time off, and I was just like, I could feel the difference. It was like, okay, now I feel explosive. I felt everything that I was looking for, you know, in the year prior, but it finally came. And you know, in the off season, I kept telling my trainer, I was like, this is going to be this year. It's going to be a great year because I feel so healthy and I feel so strong.
When you guys were able to bring down the win last night against the Rays, talking to Danny Mendick, White Sox third baseman here on White Sox Weekly, you know, obviously I know you haven't been with the team the entire time, but the struggles are obvious. You know, it's been a grind a little bit here. You get to exhale some and get a win here at home in front of Sox fans after a tough road trip. What was the mood in the clubhouse like last night?
Yeah, it was great. I think it's just a combination of things. You know, we finally had the opportunity to show what we're capable of doing. I feel like, you know, the bats have been a little cold and stuff like that, but it's baseball, and it's not always going to be like that. There's going to be times when we're going to hit the cover off the ball and months where we're going to hit the cover off the ball. So it's like, you know, to finally open that up a little bit last night and have some of our big dogs hit some homers, you know, it's a good sign. I think just keep rolling with it. Just kind of sometimes you got to roll with the punches, but the energy throughout the clubhouse has been great. The guys are great. Everyone interacts. You know, we're all hanging out. There's nobody's down or anything like that. So that's what you kind of need. And once we get over this hump, it's going to be good.
You've gotten a chance to play behind Jonathan Cannon before at Charlotte, I think. What now that we've seen him twice through the bigs and you'll be playing third base behind him tonight, what can you say about Cannon and about your time working with Nick Nastrini a little bit? I'm sure you were able to play some defense in some of his starts down at AAA Charlotte this season too.
Yeah, I mean, I always said with Cannon, I remember being when we were in AAA, I would say he's fun to play behind because he works fast, he throws strikes, and you know, as an infielder, that makes it fun. You're always on your toes, you're ready to go, and you know, he's a competitor, so you like playing behind that. And Nick's the same way. Nick, they both bring that, you know, competitive edge, and they want to get guys out, and they want to throw strikes, and they want the defense to make plays. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, they got to remember that, you know, we're out there too. So, you know, you can't always just strike everybody out. You got to make some pitches to get some ground balls or get a guy to pop up, you know. So that's what they do well, and, you know, they're going to be challenged. They're going to have times when things aren't going to go their way, but I know they got good heads on their shoulders, and they're going to keep grinding.
I won't ask for the entire scouting report, but I do want to know a little bit of how you approach Aaron Civale this evening. Not a foreign guy. He's been in division for a while. It won't be the first time a lot of y'all have taken cuts against him.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that likes to throw some cutters and sliders away and maybe run a sinker in there or sinker throw it away. So he's one of those guys you kind of just got to get him closer to the plate. Can't expand and go to where he wants to go. He wants you to go out off the plate. So just got to get him a little closer to the dish for me. And so that's kind of the plan tonight, I think, for everybody, is swing at strikes and, you know, don't chase his sliders and cutters away.
With where you've been over the last calendar year and given what your assignment has been from the coaching staff so far, are you, you know, kind of taking Major League Baseball day by day? Do you get a chance, you know, because you're kind of solid right now, to look ahead and think about what this next couple of months can be? Where is your head at from that standpoint, from the Danny Mendick standpoint of it?
Yeah, no, I've gone day by day. Just going to go out there and do my thing. I think that's kind of the biggest thing, and even something that I, you know, talk to myself about in the off season. But there's no more of you know, playing scared of what's going to happen. None of that. It's just going to be, you know, I'm going out there, I'm going to play baseball as hard as I can. And when the dust settles at the end of the day, you know, I want nothing to be able to regret. So it's kind of the way I'm looking at it right now, going out there, preparing for today and going to go have fun with it. Try to win us the ball game, help win us the ball game. And, you know, try not to get caught up in all the future stuff, but focus on today.
Last one for you, and you have to be honest. You're a guy who plays a lot of positions. How many game-ready gloves do you have, and how many are you breaking in at this moment?
Okay, that's a good one, actually.
You have to be honest, Danny. You can't short me a glove here.
No, I won't. I got 3 game-readies that I bring out every day. So I got a third base glove. I got a short second base glove. I got a outfield glove, and I actually have a first baseman's glove, which I haven't been bringing out there, but I do have a first baseman's glove.
Okay.
Then I have one glove infield that I'm breaking in, and one glove third base that I'm breaking in, and one glove outfield. So 3 gloves that I'm trying to break in outside of that.
Are they the same models that you're trying to break in, or are you messing with something new on the ones that you're working in?
No, pretty much same models, just different colors.
Okay. All right. I appreciate
yeah.
that. All right.
Yeah.
I got you. Because some of you guys, you utility players.
Very hard.
No, it takes forever.
Yeah, and if you don't do it the right way, if you don't do it the way you want it, it's like, all right, I might as well just give this one away.
Do you have the routine set now? Like, would you, like if a young ball player came in and they were like, hey, Danny, I'm trying to figure out how to break in this glove. Do you feel solid enough with your glove break-in routine that you could walk him through the steps?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Can we get those steps next time you're on White Sox? Maybe like a Danny Mendick how to break in a glove tutorial?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We'll do that for the gram. I think that's what the kids call it. Danny, you're the man. Appreciate you.
Connor, thank you, man. Thanks
Good
for
luck tonight.
Me. All right. Take care.
White Sox third baseman Danny Mendick, our guest here on White Sox Weekly. A solid dude and on a good run for the White Sox, too. Three multi-hit games in his last five. And when you think about what this White Sox offense wanted to be from the standpoint of one Pedro Grifol and even Chris Getz, it's a team that without Robert and Moncada, and even though Eloy is in the lineup right now, he's not been in it for the bulk of it. It was a team that needed to move the baseball and get on base. They walked some last night. Danny Mendick is a guy that can get you some walks and move the baseball, a contact-oriented dude. And you heard Danny say it there, too. Like, last night, a difference was the fact that some of their big dogs, that's what he called them, got the ball out of the ballpark. Martin Maldonado hit a three-run homer. Eloy Jimenez hit a two-run shot. And in front of Eloy Jimenez, Robbie Grossman earned a walk. And I just, that kind of on-base pressure, I know I harp on it on a lot of post-game shows, but to me, you know, just given the era of baseball that I got brought up in, the baseball stuff that I read when I was a kid, the way this game got communicated to me through, you know, whether it be Baseball Tonight or podcasts or whatever, you know, that importance of working walks and getting deep into counts and really tiring pitchers out, not just to get into the meaty part of the bullpen, because that doesn't exist anymore, really. Everybody throws a billion miles an hour. But to just wear out that at-bat, wear out your at-bat, so that the next guy's got a slightly more tired pitcher so that hopefully he gets one that's down the pipe and can yank out of here, that matters in ball games. And that is such a big focus for how, you know, I think about a functional offense, an offense that is going to move from one batter to the next without needing every single time the benefit, the luck of a batted ball in play. Sure, you got to have that too, and every now and again you're going to have four singles to make one run, and that's going to be the difference in a ball game, and all that stuff works, right? You're going to have to steal and all that kind of stuff. I'm there for you, 100%. But three-run homers, great, and you can win a lot of ball games hitting three-run homers. And when you got one last night from Martin Maldonado and then added on later, you felt a lot better for the pitching staff that was going to come in and face these Rays that are still a dangerous lineup, even though they're off to a 13-14 start. It felt like a complete game for the White Sox last night. And I don't mean just like the cleanest, easiest, you know, in and out ball game. What I mean is that you had at times some individual struggles. Jordan Leisure lost the strike zone for a bit. Michael Kopech hit a guy and walked a guy, right? Like, Chris Flexen walked the first two hitters he faced in the sixth inning before the White Sox had to go to the bullpen, and they got a great relief appearance from Dominic Leone to get out of that inning. So complete in the sense that you had to fight through some things. You had to work through some less than ideal performances, which is going to happen over the course of nine innings, to say nothing of 162 games. And still, everybody picked everybody else up. The hits came down. The homers went out. The walks, it was just a really nice thing to see last night. And I think, you know, given Danny's report on that, on the clubhouse mood and on how guys are kind of feeling, whether it's a loss, as there have been many, or a win last night, it's really good that they have a mix right now that's able to, at least from a morale standpoint, stand tall and get back to the ballpark for the next one, because it's the next ball game's coming for you, whether you want it to or not. I mean, it's on the way, so you may as well just get ready for it. At least that's the advice I've always gotten about it. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. Head to the ballpark on Saturday, May 11th. as the White Sox take on the Guardians at 6:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans in attendance will receive a White Sox quarter zip presented by Xfinity. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. When we come back, part two of Chris Getz's conversation with White Sox beat reporters yesterday. A lot more on the state of the organization, some of the struggling veterans in this lineup, and some more about, too, the minor leaguers that we may see at some point later on this season that could be the next big pieces for this White Sox franchise. That's all next on White Sox Weekly. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The Sox on your phone, the ESPN Chicago app.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Just got done talking with White Sox third baseman Danny Mendick. If you missed the interview, download the ESPN Chicago app. Each and every episode of White Sox Weekly is downloadable right there. You can listen back to the great interviews like the one we had with Danny Mendick earlier today. White Sox general manager Chris Getz was interviewed by White Sox beat reporters yesterday. This is fresh tape. It's practically blooming. It's so fresh. And we want to bring the part two of it to you here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. So Getz begins this portion of the conversation talking primarily about the struggles that Andrew Benintendi has gone through in the first month of the season. Here's Chris Getz.
What have you seen from Andrew Benintendi, both offensively and defensively?
You know, it's been streaky. Obviously, it's he's playing below, you know, his standards. You see some quality at bats, and then you see some at bats that you feel like he's, you know, given away. He's a player that is, you know, on the search of finding the right adjustment. You can see it from at bat, from pitch to pitch. You know, he's got a track record at the major league level. We need to continue to support him. You know, defensively, you know, I know that there were some plays here recently where he didn't get the balls that perhaps he had gotten to in the past. He's got to stay at it. He does. He's frustrated, and obviously we need that bat, you know, for us to be a productive offense. So we hope we can get him going pretty soon.
Team-wide, you spent the offseason focusing on defense and fundamentals. How do you kind of react to the inconsistencies in those departments so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think with some of the injuries that affected certainly, you know, who we had to play at certain positions, those are things that you have to take into account. But sometimes they when they all come at once, it can be a little bit more difficult. You know, we've got some players that have really improved defensively and have been consistent for us in getting outs and creating outs. You know, are there areas that need to get better? Sure, but overall, I've been fairly happy with our defense. It's a huge piece of our success at this level, and we've got players that are very capable.
Do you have any concerns in regard to morale, on the way it can affect everything, concentration, the little things, and the big things?
I hope not. You know, I hope this crew can stay at it from. From my perspective, the work ethic's been really, really steady and consistent, and it's a group that we've got a handful of guys that, you know, played in all different types of seasons, winning seasons, struggles, and, you know, it seems to be a group that sticks together and motivates each other, and you know, so at this point, no, I don't have too much of a concern on that.
How about your own morale? You signed up for this, but you didn't see 3-22 coming.
Well,
has it been for you?
No, I'm fine, and quite honestly, you know, I knew that there were going to be challenges along the way, and you know, I look at the health of the organization and then the talent that we've been able to acquire, you know, in the last year or so, and. You know, you just continue to pour on, you know, into our amateur department, our player development, and international, and make sure that you know, we're disciplined with our decision making, and that's a real driving factor for me, and it motivates me. I wake up every day in a good mood and ready to take on what's in front of me.
You mentioned steady when it comes to Pedro Pujols' performance. How do you kind of evaluate his performance as a manager? You know, mid 22 losses, and ensure that bad habits aren't being formed, you know, this early on of the process?
Yeah, how he communicates with players. Obviously, in-game decisions are a part of the evaluation. I think, you know, anyone from an outsider perspective, well, why didn't we do that? Why didn't we do that? You know, more so, I really focus on the development of our players. And are we on the right track of getting those guys to be productive major league players? That is the most important thing right now.
Are you seeing what you want there?
I look forward to better performance out of our players.
Pedro mentioned the edge that Tommy Pham brings to a club. What were some of the factors in deciding to bring him into the mix?
It's his offense. You know, he's a guy who was on a playoff team last year. He's had a lot of success in the big leagues. He can hit the ball out of the ballpark. He can put together a quality at bat. From what I've gathered, he's got such an obsessiveness to win and show up every day. And I say that not even necessarily on the wins and losses. It's just, the performance for himself to help us move in a direction to win ball games.
What was the message to Fletcher as he went down to AAA?
You know, it's one of those messages when you've got a young player that is, you know, still trying to get comfortable at the major league level. We believe in you. You know, you're a guy that obviously we went out and traded for. You look at the decision making that he made in his at bats. It was actually pretty strong. Now getting the hits and getting the results. When those didn't start to fall, I think he started getting outside of himself. So really, I just want to, you know, get him down to AAA, slow his world down, and gain confidence. So when he gets another opportunity, he comes up here with hopefully a clean slate and just gets rolling.
You guys challenged Colson with a AAA start this year. How's he responded to that challenge? You think so?
He's doing well. He's a guy that once again he offers a level of consistency, and that's what's really stood out with him from the beginning. He's a guy here recently. He's been hitting for power. His at bats, like I said, have been fairly consistent. You know, he's striking out a little bit more than he has in the past. He's focusing on some adjustments to make better decisions and make greater contact. But we have all the faith in the world that that's something that's going to be solved.
Fans ask a lot about accountability. What sort of accountability happens or is necessary when a team starts 3-22?
Well, I think, you know, going back to when you're in professional sports, accountability is certainly a big part of our evaluation and what we do. And right now we're focused on what we can do today, whether it be at the minor league level, the major league level. For anyone that shows up at the office that day, how can we get our organization better? The decisions in terms of, you know, do we need to make changes to leadership roles, all those types of things. That'll happen over time when needed. But at this point, you know, we've got our work cut out for us right now, and we need to continue to just stay at it.
As GM, how burdened are you feeling by what fans are saying with their frustration and anger, what they're showing by not coming? You feeling that very differently in this role?
We had a lot of areas that need to be improved, and it's my job to do that and make good decisions for the health of the organization.
When do you expect Mike Clevinger up with the big league team?
He made a start last night. He was very encouraging with his velocity and his command. The report was good. So I we're not too far off for Clev to be up here.
And Keller's still in your picture too?
Yeah, he's another one that's been pretty impressive in his most recent starts. I anticipate him, you know, joining us at some point.
Do you see more big league action for Nick Mastrini anytime soon, or is that maybe later in the season? What do you see?
You know, it's gonna take a bulk of pitchers to navigate the season, and I think we're in a really interesting and exciting time to see some of these young pitchers get exposure at the major league level to help their development. So I anticipate Mastrini being back up here. Whether it be the signing of Clev and having Keller, they're going to be helpful to help navigate and put us in a position to win ball games, we hope. We're going to get our chances to see some of our young players come up here and pitch throughout the year.
That's the competing forces between guys like, you know, Pham and Clevinger, or one-year deals who can help you win and stop the losing that everyone wants right now, but also guys like Mastrini or Fletcher who you kind of want to find out where they're at, especially how they face major league competition by the end of the year.
Yeah, we've got six, you know, you've got 6 months to play baseball, and we're at the end of April. There's going to be plenty of at-bats and plenty of innings for our young players that we want to see up here. And, you know, we want to surround them with guys that have had some success, and there's a lot of value in that. And certainly some of these players that get the opportunity that on one-year deals to show, you know, what they can offer to Major League Baseball, there's other chances to perhaps, you know, grab some value at the trade deadline or at some point to help, you know, once again get our organization healthy.
With Charlotte being Charlotte offensively, do you have any philosophical objections to bumping a guy from Double A to the big leagues? Is that something that you as a GM just don't want to go to?
It's case to case. Quite honestly, you know, different style of pitchers. Charlotte is a place that can get sideways quickly for pitchers, and you know, we've seen that through the years. You go back to some of the arms that have been really successful at the major league level, that you look at their ERAs and at AAA, and you have to make your, you know, you have to, you know, adjust your lens a little bit on your evaluation. So that factors in at times. You know, if you're going to bring up a guy from the level before AAA, you need to make sure they're working on some things that they're going to help them at the major league level, even though you're playing against AA competition. So that's a challenge that we're aware of, our coaching staff, and that's why, you know, whether it be side sessions or how we're going to attack on a certain night, it's not just about winning the ball game or striking a guy out or getting the out. It's making pitches in places where that are going to translate to the major league level.
You mentioned wanting to get the organization healthy. Just how would you define, you know, the healthy organization in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at farm system and you know, the prospects that we have and those rankings and how we compare to other organizations. Obviously, we're climbing up there. I hope to get us towards the top, and you know, that's something that we're set out to do. Obviously, when you have a good farm system, that's an indication of talent that is coming and that have a chance to be impactful and get you wins at the major league level. So we're getting healthy. We certainly need to get healthier.
Vaughn had some good signs in Minneapolis, but what did you see from him that, you know, I guess build confidence that he could work what he's going through out at the major league level while, you know, playing every day?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Vaughn, I know that there are some times where he's a little bit out of sorts and maybe not making the decisions at the plate that we have seen in the past. You know, he's made some tweaks and some adjustments to his swing to allow him to drive the baseball to all fields. He's starting to do that. It's starting to come alive a little bit, and hopefully he can build on that. You know, he's a player that's had success here. You know, he's been around us now for a while, and we know what he's capable of doing, and we do feel like he's on the right track.
That's White Sox general manager Chris Getz in his interview with White Sox beat reporters yesterday. Lots to react to there. Conversation about Andrew Benintendi and Andrew Vaughn. I asked him about whether or not he'd bring up pitchers from AA, skipping Charlotte altogether. Mostly I was thinking about Drew Thorpe at the time, but just kind of generally, I thought it was an interesting question. We're here at the ballpark, Guaranteed Rate Field, and it is a beautiful afternoon, hopefully turning into a really nice night, ending with a White Sox victory against the Tampa Bay Rays. Jonathan Cannon gets the start for the White Sox this evening. Aaron Civale, former Guardian, and now Ray, will start for Tampa. It is windy at the ballpark. As I was listening to the last minute and a half or so of Chris Getz talk, the flags on either side of the enormous scoreboard there in center field were blowing in completely opposite directions. You had the ones on the left side of the scoreboard, the American flag, the Palmia, and the Chicago flag, blowing from left to right across the field, so from left field toward right field. And then the flags on the right side of the scoreboard, the two White Sox logos that are up there, blowing in the exact opposite direction, which they're not currently doing now, but they were doing it for a little while. It can swirl here at Guaranteed Rate Field, so it could be a wild one in the outfield and on pop-ups on the infield tonight. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on the show. I want to get to those things we mentioned that Chris Getz kind of wrapped up there at the end. We'll hear from White Sox outfielder Tommy Pham in a little bit as well, and we'll talk about Jonathan Cannon making his third start in the bigs tonight against an aggressive Rays lineup and how he could make that work for him. This is the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Carmen and Yurko, noon to 3, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back. It's White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. Start your game day with a pregame patio party. 2 hours of an all-you-can-eat drink, eat and drink buffet. Let me try that again, because it deserves it. 2 hours of an all-you-can-eat and drink buffet. That's what it is. It's not all-you-can-eat and drink. It's all-you-can-eat and drink buffet, starting at just $63 per person. It's the best value in the ballpark for food, fun, and excitement. For more information, visit whitesox.com/party areas or call 312-674-1000. In case you are a frequent listener, and I would bet you are, of the Len and DJ show, as they do the play-by-play for your White Sox, you've heard Len and DJ mention the Bertucci's out there in the patio, the famed cheeseburger that gets eaten in about 4.5 seconds whenever we're graced with its presence up here at the broadcast booth. DJ likes the combo, the Italian beef and the sauce. It's the food. The patio is unbelievable, so you should get yourself out there, celebrate with some good grub, and a White Sox ball game here at a beautiful Guaranteed Rate Field. It's a gorgeous evening. It's really nice. It feels today like we said goodbye to that, you know, kind of light jacket part of spring. I hope I'm right. I don't really believe in jinxes about anything, not anything major, so I'm definitely, I think this is it. Guys, I think we made it. I think this is the turning of the corner. I think the light jacket goes away. I think most of the hoodies can be tucked up and under, at least for, you know, the daytime portion of your baseball schedule. You know, maybe you got to put a hoodie on at night when you're gathering around the campfire or something like that and keeping a baseball game on the radio. That's how I spent my summers. I don't know about you guys. But I think we're there. I think we are finally there. The White Sox won a ball game last night, 9-4 over the Rays. Way better than the alternative. A couple of things that Chris Getz talked about in his interview with White Sox beat reporters yesterday that we'd not gotten to yet are the struggles had by Andrew Benintendi and Andrew Vaughn, the Andrews of the ball club. Now, obviously, it's well reported. It's been a clear issue at this point in the season. The offensive struggles, period, have held this club back from being able to get themselves into some consistent winning baseball. Yeah, there have been other issues in areas, but overall, it's not the defense that's costing them as many ball games as they've lost. It's not the pitching that's absolutely sabotaged them in every single game. It's been a rough stretch over the last seven. I don't mean to necessarily excuse that. They didn't give up any less than six on the road trip in Philly and Minnesota, and that's not going to get it done. However, when you're looking over the course of these, 26 games this season, what you are looking at is an offense that is, unfortunately, bottom rung in Major League Baseball right now. When Andrew Benintendi was brought in here as in 2022, last year, 23 last year, it was to be the on-base guy who plays a great left field that knows how to take a tough at-bat and can be in the top, you know, 1-2 or, you know, 6-7 or 5-6 part of the lineup. A guy who can face some tough lefties, too, that can be that everyday dude. And the struggle has just been pretty real here over the first month of April, whether that be offensively or, as Getz talked about in his conversation with reporters yesterday, defensively. There's been a couple of balls that have dropped down the left field line that even Getz talked about as needing, you know, some better consistency and some more conversation, perhaps a little bit better preparation. He mentioned too, were all things that are on the table. And, you know, we've seen Benintendi take a seat here for a couple of nights, not in a row or anything like that, but just in a couple of matchups where you'd otherwise see Andrew Benintendi. We had seen other White Sox outfielders. There's really no mistaking it. There's really no doubt here that in order for this team to catch a little bit of a run, to goose itself into a much better feeling offensive 1-9, Andrew Benintendi and Andrew Vaughn need to be, I wouldn't even say just like the guys on the back of the baseball card, or in Vaughn's case, the guy that the scouting report had him being in the draft, right? They've got to be better than where they're at now. It had been really encouraging in a couple of ABs that Vaughn had taken yesterday and the day before. I'm looking at my sheet just to make sure I've got it right. Yeah, there was a double to right center field against the Twins in Minnesota in that final game. White Sox lost that one 6-3. That looked like Andrew Vaughn would used to go opposite way, riding a fastball and just absolutely crushing it into the gap. I mean, that's the kind of swing Andrew Vaughn has when the timing is there. And one of the things that hitting coach Marcus Thames has talked about to a couple of beat reporters, although I seem to remember, and I'm not going to search it right now, so I apologize to everybody, but I seem to remember him talking with James Fegan of Sox Machine about, was kind of the timing issue that they were searching to get together with Vaughn. That leg kick that just wasn't quite timed correctly, that rhythm wasn't quite there. And that can really throw a lot of things off. It can leave you searching with your hands, to say nothing of the other mechanical issues that could pop up as that gets sorted out. So for Vaughn, it over the last couple, it's definitely seemed like from at bat to at bat, there's not a whole lot carrying over. DJ's talked about this some too, where there's been at bats where Vaughn's gone out to right field and gotten that double and really rode a fastball. And then the next at bat, Vaughn with a runner on is looking at a fastball down the middle and kind of searching for, you know, what he's trying to hit there. And unfortunately, what that means is maybe you're guessing a little bit too often. Maybe it's something where you're just maybe not trusting what you're seeing up there too. And so as DJ's kind of diagnosed here from at bat to at bat, it can be a little bit of maybe too much variance with Vaughn right now. And I think once he gets into a click, once he gets into a little bit more of a run with that timing issue, I think you will start to see a little bit more of a consistent production from Vaughn. As for Benintendi, you know, we had a caller on the post-game show a couple of nights ago. I want to say it was that first game in Minnesota, but my memory's a little fuzzy. And he had asked whether, you know, Benintendi was playing through an injury. And best we know, no, that's not the case right now. But that is something that Benintendi had done last season. You know, coming back from the broken hammock bone, that can often sap a guy's power for an extended period of time. And even when guys have returned from that injury, quote unquote, 100% and ready to go, sometimes that means that they're able to resume all of the baseball activities without pain, but getting to that power and really being able to whip that bat through the zone is something that's going to take some time to get to. And that happened for Benintendi last year, or at least that's what was talked about with Pedro Grifol and Benintendi some middle of the season or so. With Benintendi, what you'd love to see is a control of the at-bats. Right now, there are a lot, especially against lefties, where he's, you know, kind of reaching outside the strike zone and really chasing and leaning. And if Robbie Grossman has shown us anything here over his, you know, time with the ball club, it's that while hitting for power is, you know, you want that, right? You want slugging percentage out of all your corner outfielders. Don't get me wrong. That's great. But being able to control some at-bats and not getting outside yourself and making a pitcher work a little bit can not only benefit you, right, get you a better pitch to hit, and get your walks up, all that other kind of stuff, be the runner on for the next guy to drive home, you know, move the line, all that good stuff. All of that is, genuinely, I'm not taking a shot, it's good stuff. That would be, in my mind, kind of that next step. That's what you'd like to see, and that's what I think Chris Getz kind of alluded to here when he's talking about Andrew Benintendi getting back to himself, is at least, you know, picking the pitches he knows he can do damage on, trying to do damage on those pitches. Whatever that damage looks like is kind of, you know, up to the baseball gods, as it were, when you're trying to dig yourself out of what the last couple of weeks have been. But taking that kind of approach, really kind of hard-nosing it through an at-bat and making that pitcher well aware that he's going to have to work to get you to chase one outside the strike zone or you know, something of that nature, that's what I think you'd love to see from really both Vaughn and Benintendi at this point. Those things, as much as anything can really be controlled in baseball, are things that you can control in an at-bat, right? That kind of relentlessness, I guess, in the individual competition. And Pedro talked about that some yesterday in his pregame press conference with reporters. You know, just knowing that you're going to have 30 to 40 seconds of your competition against the starter or reliever, you know, whoever you're facing that day. So you got to make sure that those 30 to 40 seconds, however long that AB lasts, is, you know, the utmost of your focus, the pinnacle of your abilities, all that kind of stuff. And that can be hard to do on an every at-bat, every game, every day basis. but that's what they're asking for right now. And that's one of the things that Chris gets applauded from the coaching staff, even amidst this 4-22 start, that kind of consistency, those kind of coaching points, and that kind of morale in the clubhouse does exist and is being, as best it can, capitalized on. Now, this team, with the injuries that they've suffered and the kind of the low offensive output that they've dealt with over the first month, is certainly, it's facing an uphill climb, no doubt about it. But there are opportunities to be had here, and you can kind of make some of your own, at least a little bit, by forcing that kind of compete in an individual at bat. And I think that's where the focus has really been shifted. Whether it's Pedro talking about it yesterday, Getz talking about it yesterday, Danny talking a little bit about that on White Sox Weekly here this afternoon. We had Danny Mendick on about an hour ago. That seems to be where the focus of the traveling party, as it were, is really concerned. And I find that to be a good place for the focus to be, quite honestly, and hopefully the wins come as a result of that kind of focus. 312-332-3776, that's the phone number. You want to hop on to White Sox Weekly? We got a half an hour left until the pregame show begins. White Sox and Rays coming up in just a little bit. Get you a little bit on the pitching matchup in just 10 seconds. We'll pause it here for station identification.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WSHE HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
So for the Sox tonight, rookie Jonathan Cannon makes start number 3. And for the Rays, it'll be Aaron Civale. We'll talk about both of those hurlers when we come back. And the decision the White Sox made to have Cannon stay in the big league rotation and Nick Nastrini, one of the top arms in the system, head down to AAA to work on his craft before rejoining the White Sox at some point later on this season. A little pitching conversation when we come back. It's a Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
We have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, so call today.
For all the right reasons, call 8664-SEASONS.
The ESPN Chicago Triple Play AM, FM, HD, and app.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Welcome back to the ballpark, or at least, vicariously through the speakers of your radio. I'm Connor McKnight, 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. Seats are filling up here at Guaranteed Rate Field. We got the giveaway today. It is the White Sox hockey sweater. I think I called it a jersey earlier, which I'm so sorry. I covered enough Blackhawks games to know that is a hockey sweater, friends, and not a hockey jersey. It's a good look, sky blue kind of across most of it and across the shoulders, a block of white with, Chicago in script across. I always forget what that script Chicago is from. I want to say that's that late 60s Chicago script where there's that big swoop from the O that goes back underneath Chicago in diagonal. Across the front of the jersey, if you're wearing it in a baseball version, or sweater, if you're wearing it as a hockey person. And there are a lot of people wearing them as baseball fans here today. It is a really, really nice night here at the ballpark. A lot of wind, though, scooping through the area. I mean, it is really howling out here. Flags have been blowing all afternoon, and I don't think that's going to stop. I think we could have a pretty windy rest of the weekend, or at least best as I can read the weather app that I've got. And it's something that Jonathan Cannon, White Sox starter tonight, is going to keep in mind, I would imagine. And I think Aaron Civale of the Rays is going to think about it too, but we're more concerned about Cannon at this point here on the broadcast. I'm really interested to see Cannon's third start of his big league career. The first one was good. The second one was bad. And I'm hoping the third one gets back to being good, and then he can be a little bit more consistent going on down the line. It's obviously a lot to ask. Being a rookie starter in the bigs is probably one of the most difficult situations to be in, right? I mean, even if you've got, hairy, nasty stuff, you still have to go up and face big league hitters, find a strike zone, and, oh, by the way, hope that you're not getting injured along the way, which I think more and more is a topic of conversation around Major League Baseball with all the elbows that we've seen kind of exploding here lately. That aside, Cannon is a strike thrower. That was his MO in Georgia, at least after he made the switch to the arsenal and tweaked his mechanics some heading into his sophomore year. He's going to attack the strike zone and has done that throughout his minor league career. this Rays team will chase outside the strike zone. Len talked about this some on the broadcast last night. They're one of the chasiest teams, not a word, but I'm using it. One of the chasier, also not a word. They chase a lot, do the Rays. And I think what will be very interesting to watch Jonathan Cannon learn, or really pitchers of extreme command learn over their first, I call it 10 starts in the bigs, and it might not be something that they're even looking at on the scouting report tonight, is when to miss, right? When to throw it outside the strike zone. When to try and get that chase, or even whiff if you can get it. There's two different, you know, obviously, I think you probably know at this point, you're listening to White Sox Weekly, you're a savvy baseball fan, but I'm going to work the basics of this a little bit. A chase is different from a whiff, right? A chase is going for something outside the strike zone. If you tap it or you whiff it, it's still a chase. If you swing and miss on a pitch that's outside the strike zone, that is a whiff. You can whiff on a pitch in the strike zone as well. And a lot of these data points, a lot of these terms are being measured and percentagized on Baseball Savant here, which is a beautiful website, carries a lot of information. I mean, between Baseball Savant and Fan Graphs and Baseball Reference and Baseball Prospectus, I don't know that any of us could really do our jobs. But when I think about what Cannon is going to work here tonight, I wonder how aggressive outside the strike zone Cannon and his battery mate Martin Maldonado are going to get against the Rays. You can be victimized a little bit by throwing too many strikes. If you're around the plate, like if you're MO, and shoot, Zach Eflin ran into this a little bit last night against the White Sox. Eflin came into the game with a 0.6 walks per nine, best in baseball, only two walks on the season. And he got a little wilder than I think he had been over his last couple of starts. He walked back-to-back hitters at one point against the White Sox. I want to say that was in the, yeah, that was in the second inning, third inning. Back-to-back walks for the Sox. It ended up in a run scored on a sacrifice fly by Andrew Vaughn. And that kind of understanding that he's throwing me strikes. And it gets outside of the strike zone, starts walking to people. You can settle back down, but he's coming back after you with strikes, because it's no way that Zach Eflin had his soul just leave him and the understanding of the strike zone evaporate. I'm going to get strikes here. And for whether it was Martin Maldonado or whether it was Paul DeJong who had a good single, whether it was Danny Mendick who shot one back up the middle or Mendick who had a double down the corner, you know that you're going to get good pitches to hit because he throws strikes. There's wild inside the strike zone too, right? And I think that's where young starters really start to see, you know, that their ability to throw strikes, to keep it in the strike zone, doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to keep them efficient. And keeping it around the edges and making sure you're also commanding the ball to the right places matters a lot too. And I think with Cannon, you know, if you look at the scouting report on Jonathan Cannon on MLB Pipeline, I think it says the floor for Cannon, like a surefire number four starter in your rotation, set it and forget it, Ronco kind of thing. Like that's the package that Jonathan Cannon has. He'll be that guy in the rotation, according to the scouting reports. How high he can get in a rotation, just the ceiling for him, might be capped by his ability or lack thereof to get swings and misses. If he can generate more of those, perhaps he's got a higher ceiling as a starter. If he can get more ground balls, perhaps he's got a higher ceiling as a starter. If he's able to keep it off the barrel, like Aaron Civale has been throughout his career, and get weak pop-ups, maybe he's got a higher ceiling. I think more and more, you know, the strikeout has been fetishized, the velocity has been talked about in this game, and the conversation from the very tops of the baseball mountain, right? From Rob Manfred, the commissioner, all the way on down to lowly White Sox weekly hosts, has been about velocity and what it can do for pitchers and how scary it is for hitters and how scary it is for pitchers' elbows. But I think that we will start to see, and it may take some time, but we will start to see the incentivization by organizations for pitchers who get it done by managing their velocity throughout games. The Justin Verlander effect, you know, at least for my generation, is something that has been written about some here over the last little bit. Verlander was a guy with the Tigers early on, well, maybe the first 10 years of his career, was well known to sit 94. Listen, White Sox fans, watch Verlander do this. It's not exactly a fond memory, but Verlander would sit 94, 95, something like that, and then toward the end of his starts, sometimes even in the ninth inning, could rev it back up and hit 98, 99. And to that effect, a phrase that I really like that I'm ripping off from Jim Margulis of Sox Machine is be his own reliever. And when you're able to dial that back up and reattack hitters with a different arsenal because your velocity is higher, because you'd, whether you want to call it saving some or what, you know, whatever, that's meaningful. You can save an extra, like literally an extra pitcher out of that bullpen by just, you know, humping it up a little bit, sacrificing some command and letting it eat. But you don't have to do that the entire start. We've seen more max effort pitchers here over the last 5-6 seasons. And, you know, I can't testify to whether Jonathan Cannon is max effort on every pitch or not. I don't know that he'd be necessarily that honest about things one way or the other. I think you're seeing more guys who are because they come from, you know, off-season training programs like Tread or Driveline or what have you, where you know the focus is max effort. That's what is preached and that's what has been rewarded. But for, I don't know, I just, for pitchers in this White Sox organization who have seen, and this organization itself, who has seen the benefits of pitching to contact, of being able to stay deep into ball games. And yeah, you know, we're talking about pitchers who have done this, you know, the Mark Burleys, the Jose Contreras's of all of this years before. It can still work that way. This town has seen it with Kyle Hendricks on the north side, being able to command and control his way to excellence. It can be done. It might just be harder to get to the big leagues doing it. I don't know that it's just as hard to stay here if you're good at it. After all, it's very hard to throw 99 and get it across the strike zone too. So I wonder if, you know, I'm kind of making a little bit of a reach here, but whether Jonathan Cannon and the idea of a command and control guy without extreme and elite velocity is something that teams will begin to zag toward in their player profiles, in their scouting reports, in the minor leaguers that they bring up or at least are drafting. I think, you know, boiling it down to one game, right, like tonight, I think watching Jonathan Cannon work around the strike zone some or how he's going to attack these Rays hitters is going to be an interesting one because it's going to be a very early rookie lesson that he's trying to implement here against a decent lineup that's got, won't have Yandy Diaz in it, but will have Randy Arozarena and Isak Paredes and Ahmed Rosario was off to a great start and Curtis Meade, you know, guys who can get the job done. And the Rays, as an organization, have been an offense that knows how to attack their pitch and knows how to get the best out of matchups too. So you can also rest assured that the guys that are in this lineup tonight are the ones that the Rays think have a really good chance of taking down a pitcher like Jonathan Cannon. So nothing easy, nothing given tonight, that's for sure. 312-332-3776, that's the phone number. This is White Sox Weekly. We got a little bit left of the show before we start the pregame show here tonight. White Sox and Rays coming your way at 6:10, pregame show at 5:30, and we're going to take a quick break here on White Sox Weekly. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
And Jay Hood, Monday morning at 7, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. Last few minutes of the show before we begin the pregame festivities for the White Sox and Rays here at Guaranteed Rate Field tonight. Jonathan Cannon for the White Sox, Aaron Civale for the Rays. And the White Sox lineup we gave to you a little bit earlier in the show, but I'll give it to you one more time because you're going to hear from the second-place hitter, Tommy Pham, in just a moment. Nicky Lopez leads off. He's at second base. Tommy Pham in center field. Gavin Sheets has right. Eloy Jimenez will DH. Andrew Vaughn at first base. Andrew Benintendi in left field. Danny Mendick at third base. Paul DeJong at short. And Martin Maldonado will do the catching. Tommy Pham arrived to the ballpark yesterday and in short order got to work helping the White Sox win a ball game. He had two hits, reached on an error, scored one. The single up the middle in the first inning was 106 off the bat, and the reach on an error was 102 off the bat. So that's where your exit velocity on a grounder, a screamer to the second baseman, helps you reach and helps your team win, right? I mean, it's hitting the ball harder doesn't just benefit the highlight show home runs. It benefits in a lot of other places as well. Pham spoke to reporters, kind of a get-to-know-you situation. He was honest and candid, as is his reputation. So here's a little bit of Tommy Pham yesterday getting to White Sox beat reporters.
Glad to be back in the big leagues. You know, there were some guys that were trying to make a video last night. You know how they're doing the new videos when guys get called up. Yep, they're trying to do that for me because I never got one. So here I am.
What was this offseason like for you? It was for a lot of teams, kind of slow moving, a lot of players, but for you personally, coming off the World Series, what was that like?
Compared to my previous off seasons in free agency, it was great in a good way because we were getting a lot of phone calls early. And even throughout the free agency, it's just the offers didn't roll in until after spring training started, which was very unusual. Because the previous free agencies, the offers were in before spring training. So it's just different in that sense. But, I mean, the calls and especially the amount of teams that were calling, it gave me a level of optimism. The offers didn't come, so it was just kind of confusing.
What was it about the White Sox that you liked then ultimately from those offers?
You're looking at here in San Diego, basically. Once I turned down the other offers, just came down to one, the economics. And, I wouldn't say opportunity because the opportunity would have been there with both teams, just in terms of money. You know, you factor in California's taxes, which I've already played there and I know how it is there. Just, you know, San Diego is going to have to match it in other ways.
What did you do to remain fresh to be able to get back up here this quickly?
Yeah, that was the thing. I had so much time, and I actually have a really good friend who was helping me kind of prepare to stay sharp. I mean, it's not quite like anything like this, but, I mean, we were going to the stadium. He was shooting me fly balls out of the pitching machine. And, we would do my hitting routine. The only thing I really didn't have was live at-bats every day. But I was flying down to Florida trying to catch some live at-bats at the end of every week, the past 3 weeks. Nothing could really mimic the game. That's the only thing. So, I got a few games under my belt. At the same time, I'm still playing catch up. You know, I'm at a disadvantage, but you know, I can't use that as an excuse. So it is what it is ultimately, and I know what I'm up against.
That's White Sox center fielder Tommy Pham. He's batting second in the lineup today for the Sox against the Rays. I wouldn't be surprised at all. You know, we talked about the quote Tommy Pham gave us there, the fact that he's at a disadvantage because of his lack of spring training, or at least conventional spring training, and not having faced live pitching a whole lot leading up to his time in Charlotte, brief as that was. I wouldn't be surprised if a veteran like Tommy Pham, you know, knowing that, you know, kind of feeling that disadvantage, so to speak, is just kind of keeping things real simple at the plate right now, you know, not trying to do anything more than identify, you know, a quadrant of the strike zone, a little bit like Luis Robert Jr. was talking about before he was hurt. Identify that pitch in that quadrant and just drive it back up the middle. It's what it looked like he did last night on the single to the left side. He got out in front of that fastball, was able to pull it, you know, attacked that pitch. And I think while this offense has struggled, we've seen a lot of hitters looking like they're reacting a little bit, trying to find it and fillet it some. And I think with Pham, you've kind of got, hopefully, this fearlessness and trust in his own game, right? I'm not saying he's fearless when it comes to the competition he's facing, just his confidence in his own game and what he's able to bring to the plate, what he's able to accomplish in that plate appearance is a pretty steady thing. And that's something that hopefully, you know, bleeds into everybody else in this White Sox lineup and is able to kind of have that sort of trickle-down effect confidence-wise that you'd heard a lot about when it came to signing veterans in spring training. You know, the idea that the White Sox wanted to bring in guys like Kevin Pillar, who's no longer here, Paul DeJong, who's at short, you know, guys who have been here before, ridden that ride a little bit and kind of understood what it is to push through that, to keep going through that, to keep that approach. So while the young kids come along, it's good to have that kind of veteran presence alongside. Production is one thing. Creating the right environment to put the work in is another, and you hope that those two things meet. When we were talking earlier on the show about Jonathan Cannon, who's making the start tonight, I did say that there were a couple of things that I wanted to get to about Nick Nastrini, too. So we'll do that here before we wrap up the show. I understand, and I heard a lot of it. I saw it on White Sox Twitter. I can appreciate it. A lot of, you know, kind of gnashing of teeth and rending of garment about Nick Nastrini being sent down to AAA Charlotte after one good start and one bad start. Nastrini's one of the top arms in the system. Outside of Noah Schultz, he is the top arm in the system. Schultz is in a different category because he's like 17 years old. He's not, he's 20. But I think with Nastrini, it's worth remembering that, like Chris Getz said yesterday, and we played it for you on the broadcast, there's a lot of time left in this season. And when it comes to what might be best for the 2025 White Sox, the 2026 White Sox, it may be that not only is Nastrini's development at this point more important than major league starts for him, because I would bet he gets at least 12 this season, probably more than that as we go along. It may also be that the Sox have, at least on the pitching side of things, grab the right kinds of arms that can, you know, flash and take hold a little bit, whether that's Flexen making a good start last night, or maybe a guy like Brad Keller who could come up from the minors and make a good one too, Mike Clevenger who's on his way. Guys that have that veteran track record looking to reestablish themselves a little bit that can be useful at a trade deadline. I mean, let's be honest, that's where the sights of this organization are set, and making sure that value can be recouped from whatever you've brought in this offseason come July 31st, or I guess August 1st, as it were, this year. Chris Getz talked about that some pretty candidly, at least best he could at this point in April, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's part of the calculus too. That's going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. An enormous thank you to Jake Cantu, our producer in the downtown Chicago studios. Big thanks to Danny Mendick for joining the show. And thanks to Brendan Riley as well, the executive producer of White Sox Baseball. We're going to step out for just a couple of minutes. The White Sox pregame show is next. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.